The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of any organization, including One Generation Away.
The freedom of a people to choose its leaders is the root of liberty.
Keep alive this experiment in liberty.
Liberty, in case you've forgotten, is the soul's right to breathe.
Government should be very minimal in protecting liberty.
Peace cannot be purchased at the cost of liberty.
The sturdy ground of liberty.
Liberty once lost is lost forever.
Fight for their liberty and for our security.
Guarantees individual liberty.
This great republic born alone in liberty.
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 Liberty. Just how much do you want liberty?
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner. Cutting through the double talk, taking on the topics, going after what the politicians really mean, and making it all clear. For your freedom and your liberty. Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Are we headed toward a new civil war? Was the ugly violence in Charlottesville, Virginia last weekend a precursor to a much larger fight over racial justice? Welcome back in to Liberty Nation, and we'll dig deep this week on the issue of political extremism and the reaction to it after the ugly confrontation between far-right and far-left extremists in Charlottesville last weekend. We'll talk to two writers from LibertyNation.com with very different viewpoints, Jeff Charles on how conservatives need to forcefully condemn the actions of the far-right, and Jim Capua, who says the left got exactly what they wanted out of the violent confrontation. And constitutional lawyer and Liberty Nation legal correspondent Scott Cosenza will discuss the role of the Charlottesville police in all this, as well as the Justice Department demand that a private company turn over the computer addresses of anti-Trump activists. Well, in the 1960s, the radical left used violence in cities and on the college campus to advance their cause, and the country reacted by electing Richard Nixon to the presidency twice. In contrast, in the civil rights movement under the leadership of Martin Luther King Jr., nonviolent resistance was the strategy to advance the cause of racial justice. And it set in motion sweeping changes to the law, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, affirmative action, whether you like that or not. Point is that nonviolent resistance resulted in a sea change in the American culture. After the Holocaust, memorials and museums were built in Germany and elsewhere to remind people of the horrors of Nazism and real fascism, as opposed to the ridiculously false claims of fascism being thrown around liberally by the left these days. A Holocaust museum was built in Washington so that people would not forget what happened in Nazi Germany and would not repeat it. Point being, nonviolent resistance worked. Reminding people of history, good and bad, also works. But instead of advancing their cause with nonviolence and allowing remnants of the Confederacy to stand as a reminder of the most painful episode in American history, the far left has chosen violence and the toppling and removal of all things Confederate. And thus, they have truly not learned from history. And that makes us that much more likely to repeat it. Now, they could have simply ignored the extremists marching into Charlottesville or organized nonviolent resistance, but they chose violent confrontation. They could have kept the statue of Robert E. Lee intact as a reminder of all of the most troubling years in the history of this nation, but the leaders of Charlottesville ordered its removal. Now, this is what Joseph Stalin did with his infamous purges in the Soviet Union. He whitewashed all remnants of his opponents and then proceeded to conduct a reign of terror that resulted in tens of millions of deaths. If there are no vestiges remaining in the public square, there's nothing to remind people of the days of slavery and Jim Crow. Do we really want that? Does that actually help the country in its effort to assure the likes of the Civil War never happens again? Now, I don't usually personalize things on this show, but let me make an exception today. As a conservative and libertarian, a conservatarian, I'm told that I must denounce the far-right extremists in Charlottesville, as if that kind of ideology exists anywhere on the legitimate right. Here's what people on the legitimate right actually do. We judge people as individuals, not as members of a group. We judge the merits of each individual person, regardless of race, creed, or color. They're good and bad white people, good and bad black people, good and bad Hispanics, and so on. But if you start from the basis of each person being an individual and not a bit player in the game of identity politics, then you won't succumb to the type of identity politics which is spread like a virus on the left. And what happened with that? They lost an election to a bombastic billionaire they vilified who couldn't possibly win, but did. Same thing as when they elected Nixon. America was sick of the identity politics and the violence and the seizure of the American culture by the left and the shaming of all who refused to participate in it. Now, I said this on our first show after the election, and I'll say it again. If Donald Trump is the atrocious monster that you say he is, you on the left, what does it say about you that you couldn't even beat him? I mean, don't insult my intelligence and my character by saying I have to condemn a philosophy which is entirely incompatible with my own worldview. Like I might actually believe, hey, I think white supremacists and Nazis are fine. Am I going to ask someone on the legitimate left if they support the destruction of property and physical attacks on defenseless students on college campuses by Antifa? Are we going to ask them whether they support the violence fomented by Black Lives Matter in places like Ferguson, Missouri? Has the legitimate left been forced to answer the insulting questions of the virtue-signaling media about the violence on the far left the way the legitimate right has been forced to answer for Nazis and white supremacists? And of course, it doesn't help that so many Republicans are doing what they do best, running for cover, afraid to support President Trump, even criticizing the president because they're cowards, seeking safe spaces when the heat gets turned up, caving in to the establishment media and defending their ideology with over-the-top false piety, which makes it appear they've got something to hide. Yeah, the right doth protesteth too loudly, with a steady stream of conservatives tripping over one another to go on TV and loudly condemn both the violence in Charlottesville and the president's response. Ain't it awful? Ain't it awful? As if we don't already know that's not what they and 99% of Americans already believe, that it's awful. This is yet another instance, like with his beatdown on the establishment media, like with the border wall, the full court press on immigration, the issue of trade, the Department of Justice going after discrimination against not just blacks and Hispanics, but Asians and whites, where Donald Trump has done or said something no other politician would do or say. He did so Tuesday with a press conference that got so many people hot and bothered. And he started by condemning the man who used his car to mow down more than a dozen protesters.
Driver of the car is a disgrace to himself, his family, and this country. When you say the alt-right, define alt-right to me. You define it. What about the alt-left? What about the fact they came charging with clubs in their hand, swinging clubs? That was a horrible, horrible day. Wait a minute. I'm not finished. I'm not finished, fake news. You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent.
Do you think that what you call the alt-left is the same as neo-Nazis?
All of those people, I've condemned neo-Nazis.
But his condemnations were insufficient for those on the left and many on the right. But the president then went on to discuss the removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, which started all the trouble, and what this portends.
You know it if you were honest reporters, which in many cases you're not. But many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop? Was George Washington a slave owner?
Yes, he was.
So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him?
I do love
him. Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now we're going to take down his statue. You're changing history. You're changing culture.
So Trump doesn't care about the media's hysterical virtue signaling. And he doesn't care about all those conservatives, Republicans, criticizing him because his multiple condemnations of Charlottesville were not enough. And what we know is that nothing Trump said or says going forward will ever be enough for the left and ingrate Republicans. He is, in their eyes, as Hillary Clinton put it, deplorable and, more importantly, irredeemable. Coming up, two very different viewpoints on Charlottesville and its aftermath from LibertyNation.com. Jim Capua says the left got exactly what it wanted. He'll join us a bit later, but first, Jeff Charles jumps on board to opine that conservatives need to forcefully and publicly condemn right-wing extremists when we return.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Charlottesville echoed of racial battles fought throughout American history. Slavery, the days of Jim Crow, the 1960s, the Civil War. So how should conservatives, libertarians, and free market types react to the ugliness and violence in Charlottesville, which made most Americans recoil in horror? The sight of armed extremists from the far right and far left wreaking havoc has elicited many different viewpoints on how the legitimate right should respond. While the president and many who support him have spread the blame around, Jeff Charles of LibertyNation.com in an article entitled "Conservatives Need to Start Talking About Racism Now" says conservatives should speak up forcefully and unambiguously in condemning the white supremacists and Nazis. And Jeff joins us now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
You know, the most compelling point that you make in your article is that it's time for conservatives to distinguish between the phony charges of racism and bigotry constantly leveled by the left and their handmaidens in the establishment media and the actual white supremacists and Nazis. That captures the essence of what you've written, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. People tend to think that the GOP has an ideology that is similar to that of the Ku Klux Klan or the neo-Nazis, which is false, obviously. But the problem is that conservatives don't really address racism in a meaningful way unless they're just rejecting the false charges that the left is making against them. It's allowed the left to dominate the conversation on race in America. And what we need to do as conservatives is to show how white supremacists and their ideology has nothing to do with actual conservatism.
Right now, it seems to me that in looking at what happened in Charlottesville, that if the strategy of the far left counter-protesters who participated actively in the violence, obviously, that if their strategy had been instead of confrontation, had been to organize to ignore this march of extremists, that we wouldn't have given these white supremacists, these neo-Nazis, these KKK members, the publicity that they got. Wouldn't it have been better if there'd been an organized strategy to simply ignore these hundreds of far-right extremists?
It's possible. I mean, the thing is, that's how it used to go in the past. I mean, this isn't the first time that groups like these have demonstrated. It's just in the past, not a whole lot of attention was brought to it. We don't live in that racial atmosphere anymore. So when events like this happen, you're going to get your Antifa, you're going to get your hard left, and you're going to get people on the left who protest peacefully. And there's nothing wrong with protesting peacefully, but at the same time, if that's going to happen, conservatives still need to outright reject these people and actually reject them in detail, talk about what they believe that we don't believe. Because as long as this continues, the left is still going to tell the American public and convince them that conservatives have way more in common with white supremacists than we actually do.
But won't the left just respond to those efforts to distance legitimate right-of-center people from the extremists who were in Charlottesville? Won't they just respond to that the way they usually do, which is to say, they're just paying lip service. We know by their actions that they're encouraging and attracting these kind of people. I mean, will actually standing up and trying to actively distinguish the legitimate right from the illegitimate far right actually accomplish anything?
You know, I've been getting that response a lot. I posted in a few groups on Facebook the article, and I got that a lot from conservatives. My answer to that is, who cares? Let the left be the left. We know the left is not going to stop using this strategy. It's a tactic. The left isn't the issue in this equation. The issue is the people that we can actually reach, people in the middle, people who are open-minded, even people on the left who are more open-minded and not so quick to label people as racist. Those are the people that we're trying to reach. And those are the people that we need to show that conservatives are not white supremacists. And so I think if we are able to argue that effectively, if we're willing to bash real, actual racism just as much as the left does, it's going to be harder to portray Republicans or libertarians or anybody on the right as actual racists.
Well, now, to what extent are you willing to blame the counter-protesters from Antifa and Black Lives Matter for the ugliness in Charlottesville? I mean, as I said earlier, they could have organized to simply ignore these people. Instead, they chose to confront them. How much do you blame the counter-protesters?
The counter-protesters that I blame are the hard left. I mean, usually when the KKK does their rallies or their ridiculous marches, you do have counter-protesters, but they're peaceful protesters. I have no problem with that. The ones that I think really share in the blame are groups like Antifa who come to cause violence. Now, nobody knows who actually started the violence at Charlottesville. It was most likely on both sides. But we already know that Antifa will go just to regular pro-Trump rallies with just regular conservatives and cause violence. So I think when the president said there was a violence on both sides, that is correct. And that's indisputable. Now, I think he missed an opportunity to actually address white supremacy in that, but that part of his statement wasn't necessarily wrong.
We appreciate your contribution. Keep on writing on LibertyNation.com.
I will. Thank you very much.
Jeff Charles from LibertyNation.com. And there's much more about this subject on LibertyNation.com. Lisa K. Donner has authored Trump Gets It Right, Blames Both Sides. And Jim Capua, who lives near Charlottesville, has written a piece entitled Smite the Right, Disasters from Charlottesville. And he joins us when we return.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Well, you just heard Jeff Charles of LibertyNation.com discuss his view that conservatives need to loudly and forcefully condemn the white supremacy and neo-Nazism on display in Charlottesville last weekend. But not everyone agrees. Jim Capua actually lives right next to Charlottesville, and he wrote from a very different angle on LibertyNation.com, saying things actually went exactly the way the leaders in Charlottesville wanted them to go. And Mr. Capua joins us now. Jim, let me start by reading a particularly provocative statement in your article regarding the famously politically correct leadership in the city of Charlottesville, and then have you react. You write, "In all, they have to view the weekend's events as well worthwhile, since it provided ample grist for the kind of shameless sermonizing, moral posturing, and virtue signaling that put them in office and keeps them there." Take it from there.
Well, I would say that you're seeing the same thing in Charlottesville post-events as you're seeing everywhere else. You're getting people on the left are pursuing established agendas. What you may see in Charlottesville within the next couple of days, because the mayor is making an announcement, in fact, this afternoon, is an acceleration of the established agendas. I think there's going to be some move to actually remove the statues immediately under the color of there being a threat to the public safety. So if that's not a fulfillment of an established agenda during, I don't know what those terms mean.
Well, you included a quote in your article from Hawk Newsom, who's the president of Black Lives Matter of Greater New York, and it speaks to the issue of the police and their response to all of this. What he said was, quote, "The police actually allowed us to square off against each other. There were fights and the police were standing a block away the entire time. It's almost as if they wanted us to fight each other." Are you saying the powers that be in the fair city of Charlottesville were actually implicitly or explicitly encouraging violence?
As I wrote before the event, it looked like that the response to the KKK rally was criticism of the police overreacting. And that seemed to set up the police for being asked to hold back in this one. And that's what I predicted. If you look at something like the Daily Caller piece that was filed from a guy who was there, that's exactly what seems to have happened. Describing the situation tactically would take too long, but essentially what happened was the police pulled back and required these maniacs on the other side to have to pass through, in effect, a gauntlet of leftist maniacs. And so you put the two sets of maniacs together and you got exactly what you would expect. The other thing that bothered me a lot about this thing is that they allowed the rightist maniacs to carry what looked to me like sophisticated weapons systems. That is to say, a pole about 2 inches wide and 2 feet long, combined with a shield. If you put those two things together, they become an offensive weapon system. That should have been prevented by any sort of reasonable policeman. So I think the orders were just to let people fight. Yeah.
We continue with Jim Capua of LibertyNation.com. So let's talk about the normal, regular folks of Charlottesville. How have they, the people of Charlottesville itself, processed all of this in the week that's passed since that ugly confrontation last weekend?
Well, I think that the people in the middle who really had no part in it either way are in a state of shock. I mean, they never, ever expected to see anything like this happen. On the left, I think what you're seeing is a view that these events simply confirm their established prejudices about the right being bad. The right-wing types in town just had their prejudices confirmed to the effect that the left conspires and spins. So the right had their prejudices confirmed, the left had their prejudices confirmed, and there's just a lot of shock among the people in the middle who just never expected things to get this bad.
Now, you also write in this piece, in general, smite the right, which is what you've nicknamed this whole kerfuffle which is probably an understatement, this whole ugly confrontation, produced benefits for Democratic and Trumpo-skeptic Republican politicians, big and small. Governor Terry McAuliffe was given a stage to emote and fume about violent outside redneck interlopers, which can't do any harm to his 2020 presidential ambitions. Now, certainly, Jim, you're not suggesting that Democrats were looking to take political advantage of this ugly turn of events.
All you can do is look at the preparations that were made and make your deductions based on those. And the preparations that were made for a variety of reasons, including splitting between two venues, a certain outcome was not unwelcome. That outcome, of course, eventuated. So, I mean, again, I can't look into the heart of Terry McAuliffe, just as I can't look into the heart of the local pals who are going to benefit from this. All I can do is look at who was in charge, who gave the orders, and what the result of those orders were. It looks to me like somebody wanted the outcome that we ended up with. I suspect that the police chief was just a pawn in all of this. So I have to look at the political authorities in town.
All right. So what do you make, last question, what do you make of all these Republicans tripping all over themselves and elbowing each other out of the way to get on TV and loudly and forcefully condemn the actions of these far-right extremists? To me, and you disagree with me if you will, they sound like they're very defensive, like they've got something to hide.
Yeah, I don't understand why these Republicans think they have to run away from a bunch of adolescent thugs. Mitch McConnell is not an adolescent thug. Mitch McConnell does not know personally any adolescent thugs, nor do any of these other people, Lindsey Graham, who are running away. Rather than just simply describe these people for what they are, which is they ain't Republicans, they instead think they have to, in effect, run away from them. And what that implies is that there's some connection between the two.
Right,
I would think
exactly.
It would be better just to simply say this has nothing to do with us. Because if you look at the people who were involved here, they displayed more the behavior of what one expects young men who have no direction and no prospects to display. And frankly, if I had to ask to define where those people come from, I'd say they're children of Obamaville. They're children of the economy and the cultural direction that was created in the last 8 years. They are simply aimless kids lashing out. They have no political significance whatsoever, and I don't see why Lindsey Graham and the rest of these guys had felt as if they had to give them any political dignity.
Jim Capua from LibertyNation.com. The Department of Justice wants a web hosting company to turn over the names of anti-Trump activists. Is this constitutional? We'll talk about it with constitutional lawyer and Liberty Nation legal correspondent Scott Cosenza when we return.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner. This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
We're just talking loud.
And now we welcome in constitutional lawyer and Liberty Nation legal correspondent Scott Cosenza to discuss a little bit about Charlottesville, but also an important decision by the Department of Justice. Hello, Scott.
Hi, Tim.
Okay, Charlottesville. Much has been written, of course, about the political extremism on display there, far right, far left. But the response of the police in Charlottesville, or lack thereof, was certainly an issue. What can you tell us about how the police responded and how it may have contributed to the ugly melee that took place?
Tim, I really think it's fair to say that it's almost 100% responsible for the ugly melee. You have two groups that are wildly contentious about the other's positions, both of whom have been subjected to and engaged in violence in other street protests around the country very recently throughout 2017. And in many of those instances, in addition to Charlottesville, we've seen stand down orders by the local power leaders who are almost universally, by the way, Democrats. So we've seen this in Berkeley. We saw it in San Jose, in other places. I think Portland as well, maybe in Washington State. This is now a common theme where Democrat politicians sort of and there's a perception by some on the left, by the way, that there is a sort of white supremacy thread that runs through the police, that actually they're allowing the fighting to sort of let the right beat down on the left. So both sides are sort of, in some sense, are perceiving this narrative that the powers that be want these fights to continue. And there are, we now have confirmation, you know, these stand down orders are there. We know it. We know it happened. And I think the police in those instances and that last week in Charlottesville, or this week, I guess, in Charlottesville, excuse me, they are responsible. Now, what do you do about it, right? What obviously, there could be political pressure applied. People can demand that as Virginians, we could write letters to Terry McAuliffe. Not that it would necessarily do much good. The governor to say,
well, he certainly was able to experience some political benefit from the. I mean, I hate to attribute the worst motives to politicians, but the way that Terry McAuliffe came riding in on his white horse and proceeded to sermonize about the evils of people who nobody believes that
he's
stuff
a real hero.
Anyway.
He's a real hero to denounce neo Nazis. He's distinguished himself in the body politic. Well, he also said, Tim. And
well,
this
he may have set himself apart in time for the 2020 presidential election, which shockingly he has aspirations.
Well, he actually demonized. I don't know if you know about this. He demonized the ACLU and said that they're in part responsible for this, which is, I think, a breathtaking statement.
It really is.
You know, they are sworn to uphold and advocate for people's rights to be free to speak, which is what they did. The police are sworn to uphold people's rights to be free from violence, and they were on the scene and really did nothing to stop people from being violent towards one another. So I think that's a scandalous.
The ACLU, you bring up a good point, because they were famous for having defended the Nazis that marched on Skokie, Illinois in the 1970s.
The
and now here they are
speech.
Again defending Nazis. And it seems to me the ACLU's position, they can't defend every breach of individual civil rights in this country, but they have to pick their spots like any other organization. It seems to me they pick the most dramatic examples to make the point about the importance of freedom of speech and civil rights.
Generally speaking, I think that's true. They do have limited resources, right?
Right.
You can't fight every battle. You have to pick and choose. And generally speaking, they've been free speech absolutists. I thought they were very weak, and I think I criticized them on this program in response, especially to the Berkeley situation, where it took a long time for them to respond in a robust fashion defending free speech. But we haven't seen that here. And the other thing you have to realize is the ACLU is a sort of federation of groups. It's not a sort of monolithic group. There is a national group and there are various state groups. So we have to be a little bit careful about who we're criticizing. And the Virginia ACLU has, I think, been very good right from the outset in demanding that everyone's free speech rights, including people who are espousing vile views, are respected, as our natural rights include and as the Constitution and Virginia Bill of Rights guarantee.
Well, as you've said so eloquently more than once on this show, free speech in the First Amendment was not added to the Constitution to protect people talking about the beauty and loveliness of America.
Yeah.
It's meant to protect people who are saying things that would get them egged or shot in a crowd.
Or arrested or whatever.
Arrested, right.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
many
we
countries.
Don't, we don't need, hey, everybody's great and I love the people in power.
I don't think people realize that the First Amendment is unique to the United States of America.
Yeah.
I mean, the nations of Europe don't have a First Amendment. They don't have absolute free speech.
Canada,
you get multiple instances where people are arrested for essentially hate speech.
Yeah. Or in Canada, I don't know that they arrest, but they issue huge fines and people lose their jobs. It's definitely not a place that has free speech.
All right. So, talking about constitutionality as we make a
somewhat tortured segue into the Department of Justice. Now, famously, during the Obama years, the IRS targeted Obama's political opponents using the force of the most feared agency of the entire federal government. You and I know a couple of things about that because we were one of the organizations targeted by the IRS. It was a political vendetta. Now, we're seeing in the Trump years the Department of Justice ordering a company to turn over more than 1 million IP addresses of people who visited a website organizing protests against President Trump's inauguration. Is this something that we should be afraid, very afraid of? Or do they have a legitimate claim by citing a D.C. law regarding rioting or inciting to riot?
I don't think that people who treasure liberty can think they have a good claim here. This is a subpoena that they sent to a ISP. The ISP hosts this certain website called Disrupt J20, okay? And it's basically a lefty group their goal was to disrupt the inauguration activities. And, you know, you or I could have visited people who wouldn't have a goal to disrupt it.
They're just curious. As journalists, you want to visit it.
It's like banning a book. Like, there's no endorsement of an idea because you access the idea.
I remember when I was sitting at a pool a few years back, and some conservative friends of mine walked by and saw me reading a book, the book written by Barack Obama, Dreams from My Father. And for the next 2 years, they just assumed that I was a liberal because I was reading the Obama book. I mean, it's the same point.
So if you have individual posts on a website, Tim, that advocate violence or discuss future violence or something like that, those are all certainly relevant to an investigation, and we would expect they would be subpoenas. It's this vacuuming up or attempt to vacuum up all these people's information, and then what becomes of that information? That it troubles anybody or should trouble anybody who's concerned about liberty. These types of measures should be strictly construed to only affect the relevant information. So for the 1.3 million IP addresses, I think we can all, you know, that's just a ridiculous statement. There's probably 100 or maybe 1,000, right, that could be legitimately traced to advancing this criminal investigation.
But then other people get caught up in the dragnet.
Yes. And what happens is, the Justice Department, they're never jealously guarding the people's liberty, okay? This is why we need the judicial oversight.
Not their job, Scott, not their job.
Well, it's a simple way to say it, but it's also a sophisticated way to say it. In other words, they're not rewarded for that, right? They're just rewarded for getting their job done, which is prosecuting these people. And if they have
to leave it to groups like the ACLU to come in and file
also,
grievance or protest against
and also,
it.
And also, you know, another common theme that we talk about here on the show is, we need the judiciary to be robust defenders of our liberty when they inevitably will review this subpoena and say to the DOJ, absolutely not. Let's come back with an appropriately tailored subpoena, narrowly focused on the people who may have committed crimes. Not everybody in the world not the 1.3 million IP addresses who happened to visit this website for reasons we don't know.
One more quick story. Jeff Sessions. Marijuana governors, tell us.
Jeff Sessions sent a number of letters to the governors of states that have legal marijuana, asking them all sorts of ways that they're going to try to prevent unlawful access to them and all sorts of things. And they were citing some bad data and some untrue facts. And they have almost universally responded with a sort of, hey, go pound sand, back off this idea that we're somehow, we've created a problem because of your federal laws. And I think it's refreshing, and I think it's a good rebuke to Mr. Sessions' attempt to frustrate the will of the voters and federalism in the states.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Tim.
Don't forget, you can catch Liberty Nation Radio and our podcast, The Uprising, on demand at libertynation.com and find podcast providers everywhere. So that's it for this week, but we'll be back at you next week, same time, same station. Till then, this is Tim Donner saying stand up for liberty, and we'll see you next time on Liberty Nation.